I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. President Obama spent 2 days in Mexico last week promoting economic development and cooperation, working to improve the relationship between the two countries trapped, he said, in old stereotypes.
You know, some Americans only see the Mexico that is depicted in sensational headlines of violence and border crossings. And let's admit it, some Mexicans think that America disrespects Mexico, or thinks that America's trying to impose itself on Mexican sovereignty, or just wants to wall ourselves off. And in both countries, such distortions create misunderstandings that make it harder for us to move forward together.
That was a speech at the National Museum of Anthropology in Mexico City, where Obama touted the country's expanding manufacturing and technology industries and its growing middle class. He acknowledged that America's appetite for drugs fuels Mexico's violent drug war and said that the U.S. immigration system does not reflect American values. We asked Tim Johnson to join us on Radio Times. He's Mexico City bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers. He previously worked for 14 years for the Miami Herald covering U.S. policy towards Latin America. And Tim Johnson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Speak with you, Marty.
This trip did not get much coverage in the United States. I had to look deep in the newspapers to find some stories about what happened in Mexico and then Costa Rica the day later. How about in Mexico? How much coverage did it get?
Oh, it got lots of coverage here because President Obama, of course, most Mexicans realize it, that the U.S. policy towards Mexico is critical toward their country.
I don't know if we have a technical problem or not. I'm going to just keep persevering here because our phone line is not perfect. I played that clip from the National Museum of Anthropology in Mexico City. Who was the audience there?
Well, it was many hundreds of people, largely secondary school students at private schools who were taught in English, and also business executives and bankers. So it was not representative of Mexico as a whole.
You know what, Tim, we're going to try to figure out how to call you back here, only because the phone line just sounds like you're a bit underwater there.
Okay.
So if you hang up, we'll call you back, and hopefully we can establish a better phone line. And again, we are talking with Tim Johnson, or at least hoping to talk to Tim Johnson. And again, he's Mexico City bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers. And we invited him to join us on Radio Times because he is based in Mexico City. He has covered Latin America for a number of years now for the Miami Herald and for McClatchy Newspapers. And as I said to Tim Johnson, there was not much coverage in this country on that trip, but we wanted to find out about the coverage in Mexico. And Mexico, a very important trading partner for the United States. I think you might be surprised that about the economic relationship between these two countries, and that's what we will be talking about on Radio Times. Also, Mexico has a relatively new president, been in office about 5 or 6 months, and has done some interesting things in that country, certainly worth talking about. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. If you want to give us a call, again, that phone number, and hopefully these phone lines work, is 1-888-477-9499. Tim, hopefully we have established a better line. I'm getting a lot of thumbs up here.
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, it's still not great, but I will carry on and we'll see if our engineer can fix it as we go along. President Obama talked about a kind of a new Mexico. He talked about these growing industries in manufacturing and technology, a growing middle class as well. Is that what you see reporting from Mexico?
Well, I certainly see a strong economy. Mexico has done very well, done better than U.S. in terms of economic growth. But this isn't something that average Mexicans yet feel.
We're going to call you back, but I think we have another guest. Do we have another guest? All right. I'm going to actually go to our other guest who is waiting in the wings here to talk to us and with us about Mexico. Christopher Wilson is associate at the Mexico Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He develops the Institute's research and programming on regional economic integration and U.S.-Mexico border affairs. And Chris Wilson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thanks a lot.
Sorry about that messy start to the show today. Hopefully we'll get Tim back on the line. But let me ask you some of the same questions I was going to ask him. And I am curious about why this trip to Mexico got so little coverage in the United States.
I think it's something that, you know, people sometimes worry about Mexico not receiving as much coverage in the U.S. as other countries, say China or some of the hot spots like Iraq or Afghanistan. But in some ways, it's also a signal of a mature relationship that we're working out sort of, you know, we're working as partners on major issues already. And we're every time there's a visit between the presidents, we're sort of ironing out the kinks in the relationship. We're trying to set the stage right now for the next years of collaboration between the United States and Mexico. So, you know, I think the reason is there's no big news to say. There were working groups started from on economic issues. There's an advances on educational exchange, but there's nothing massive happening right now that will, you know, reach the same level of newsworthiness as what's happening in Syria or other places in the world.
But do you think the president was trying to cement a relationship with Mexico? And of course, you know, there's the audience in Mexico, and then there's the audience here in the United States as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the really interesting things about this trip is that I think for President Obama, this was actually him being able to play international affairs and domestic politics all at the same time. So, you know, he came to talk about things like the economic relationship between the United States and Mexico, but also about immigration reform, which is really seen as a domestic issue here in the United States. And I think he was, as much as he was speaking to the Mexicans themselves about a new relationship and a new tone, partners of equals between the two countries, he's saying that to a domestic audience here in the United States, to the 30-some-odd million Mexican-Americans living in the United States.
Let me quote something from President Obama's speech last week. He said, we also know that as a nation of immigrants, the immigration system we have in the United States does not reflect our values. It separates families when we should be reuniting them. It's led to millions of people living in the shadows, sort of underscoring what's going on in this country. And obviously, it plays out in Mexico as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is a really important topic to Mexico. You know, most Mexicans have a family member of some relative of some distance that's spending, has either lived in the United States or is living in the United States. So this is a big issue to them. It's important economically because of the remittances that come back to families in Mexico. But nonetheless, I think what's been learned by the Mexican government over the last decade is that this is really a topic that has to be dealt with politically in the United States as a domestic issue. The last time that that Mexico really tried to negotiate a bilateral migration reform with the United States was around 2000-2001, and that just didn't work out. One, because of the events of September 11th and the sort of change in tone that caused in the United States regarding migration, but also just because the interests in the United States that are pushing for and against immigration reform are very strong. Mm. They're very important political voices in this country, and there's really not too much that Mexico can put on the table to say sort of, okay, if the United States gives this, we'll give that in exchange. So this time, President Enrique Peña Nieto in Mexico has said, you know, we support an immigration reform in the United States. That would be very welcome, but it's an issue that needs to be figured out by the United States, and he just left it at that.
Well, let me go back to Tim Johnson, and Tim, I apologize for this. We're going to give you one more shot, and Tim, okay. He's Mexico City Bureau Chief for McClatchy Newspapers, and Tim, Chris Wilson was talking about this immigration issue, something that the president mentioned in his speech in Mexico City. How does the immigration issue in the U.S. play out in Mexico?
Well, there's not, you know, Mexicans, I think, as Chris sort of alluded to, realize that it's very important, but Mexico also has a decades-old tradition of you know, supposed non-interference in the domestic affairs of other countries. And they realize that if they play their hand too strongly here, it could affect the debate on Capitol Hill. So the Mexican foreign ministry certainly is just trying to be supportive of voices saying that reform is important not only for the United States, but also for Mexico.
You had mentioned earlier, looking at the Mexican economy, that actually since 2009 has probably, generally speaking, performed better than the United States. Do you think that, Tim, has affected the numbers of Mexicans trying to enter the United States?
It has. I think, you know, I personally believe that the downturn in the U.S., especially in construction, has probably played as big or bigger role than growth in Mexico. What happens is the Mexican economy has done very well in certain areas, and it's just extraordinary how the automotive sector has taken off as a platform here in Mexico for exporting cars to Brazil, South America, and to the U.S. The aerospace industry is also doing very well, but these are industries that don't employ tremendous amounts of people, not like the maquilas along the border, which have also been doing very well, but for reasons external to Mexico. A lot of it has to do with the cost of labor in China and economic the situation in Brazil, where their products there are more costly and so forth. So Mexico is just benefiting from a good tailwind.
Mm. But would it be fair to say that there is a growing middle class, but clearly still a large population of poor people in Mexico?
52 million poor people, according to the figures here of the Mexican agency responsible for measuring. There is a middle class that it's growing, but it's I differ from some people who say it's growing, significantly. I don't see it. I've lived in countries where, I've lived in China, I've lived in Peru, where middle class is notably growing. You see shopping centers popping up and so forth. That's not happening yet here in Mexico that I see.
Well, let me go back to you, Chris Wilson. Anything you want to weigh in on that, looking at Mexico's overall economy?
Well, I think right now Mexico is in a very good moment economically. As Tim said, it's growing faster than the United States, and that sort of changes the dynamics of the economic relationship between the United States and Mexico. It means that the United States can actually tap into Mexico as a source of growth, where traditionally Mexico has been seeking to integrate with and tap into the U.S. economy as a source of growth. This is actually, as President Obama said, in a different context, more of a relationship of equals in that sense right now. It's really interesting, the sort of, we had, if you looked at the headlines about Mexico 2 years ago, you would have only seen sort of drugs and violence. And right now, those still are there, but there's a lot of new, more positive stories about the Mexican economy and about where the country's heading. And that's absolutely true. All those really positive stories are true. But this is a little bit of an overcorrection, maybe. The narrative was really too negative before, even while some good things were happening. So this isn't sort of from night to day, a brand new era in Mexico's economic growth. These are things that have been building slowly, really since the 80s and 90s, as Mexico gained macroeconomic stability, as Mexico set the basis for growth so that it could start to compete in these industries like the auto industry, the aerospace industry, high-end electronics. And Mexico is just sort of slowly but surely moving its way up the value chain to become a middle-class country. And again, that's nothing sort of night to day either. As Tim says, it's not that this middle class is jumping out of nowhere, but it is slowly growing.
Well, I do want to pick up on what you both have said. A quick break before we get back to our conversation. Talking about U.S.-Mexico relations with Tim Johnson, Mexico City Bureau Chief for McClatchy Newspapers, and Chris Wilson, Associate at the Mexico Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Westchester University Online Studies. From an accredited MBA to a master's in special education, convenient and flexible degree and certificate programs are available in several subject areas such as business, health, and education. For more information or to submit an application online, wcupa.edu/grad. Westchester University. Learn more.
Next time in Studio 360,
the short and talented Mel Brooks.
So you, I'm working for Mel Brooks.
What's funny, this is human behavior. Now, if we just exaggerate a little bit, these are what fools we are.
Mel Brooks is my guest next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
You can't beat that.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
Hi, I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. Sound Opinions is the world's only rock and roll talk show.
And as hosts and critics, we get a chance to debate our favorite bands, but everybody's a critic, so we like to give our listeners the last word.
Guys, that was painful.
And yeah, Jim and Greg, I agreed with you guys.
They are horrible.
It's not a complaint, it's a thank you.
Thanks for the in-depth story there.
tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking with Chris Wilson and Tim Johnson about U.S.-Mexico relations. President Obama was there last week for 2 days. He spent a day in Costa Rica, now back in Washington, D.C. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Tim, let me go back to you and talk about the drug war, I guess, as it's being played out in Mexico. Something like 60,000 Mexicans have been killed since 2006. There were and have been reports of criminal gangs and just sort of unspeakable violence. Are those acts still being carried out and getting less coverage?
Precisely. The pace of murders, of homicides related to the drug war has not diminished significantly under the Peña Nieto government. It's still going along at about 1,000 deaths per month.
Wow.
But newspapers are definitely giving it less coverage, and that's precisely what the Peña Nieto government wants. They would like to have it off the front pages, partly because they know that this image of Mexico's moment, or the new Mexico, is what they need.
And is that because the president asked them not to cover it? Is there some kind of cooperation between the president and the press?
Well, I don't think it's so direct, but it's certainly hard to get figures. And the Interior Secretariat, which under the previous president, Felipe Calderon, would have a press conference every 10 days or so announcing the capture of some other alleged drug lord. Now, they almost never occur. So there's just not much government information available about what's going on. But there continue to be areas of states of Mexico that are that have the trappings of municipal and state government control, but are really have parallel powers in which the narcos and the drug lords and crime lords really control everything.
And it also looks like the Mexican government, Tim, is stopping, the access that this country has had to security agencies in Mexico.
It's been interesting to watch that, and it's partly because the cooperation had grown so enhanced under the previous government to the point where, U.S. law enforcement and intelligence agencies had interacted directly with their counterparts, and they didn't go through any sort of central window, and that has changed now. And so, as before, the Mexican Navy would carry out, almost, it would capture some sort of crime figure every month. Now they're completely marginalized from the fight. And the Peña Nieto government hasn't really publicly outlined very many details about how it intends to combat organized crime.
Chris, you want to weigh in on this?
Sure. I think that the new government is still sort of getting their feet under them and working out the specifics of their strategy to deal with organized crime in Mexico. But one thing that we do know is that the strategy will shift in terms of its goals from directly confronting the criminal organizations, which was the approach of the last presidency, to focusing on reducing levels of violence. So as these 60,000 murders, drug-related murders, have happened in Mexico, the public has sort of rightly and normally cried out and said, we need to have less of this violence happening. And so that was the demand of the people on the new president, and they're trying to work out the right way to respond to that. So they're talking about doing things like social programs to try to reduce violence, creating a new federal police force that would work in some of the hardest hit areas. But really, all these things that they've laid out on the table so far are medium to long-term initiatives. They're things that will take a long time to have the right effect. So there's still a big question, what will the government do in the short term, and how will they work with the United States in order to lower rates of violence quickly? Because that's what the people demand. I sort of think about it like when President Obama took office, right as the financial crisis was hitting the United States, he could say that it was Bush's problem for a while. He could say that this was the crisis that he inherited, but very quickly it becomes his own crisis. And that's what will happen and is happening already to President Peña Nieto. He can only for so long say that this is the drug war that he inherited. Very quickly it's becoming his own security challenge.
Tim, let me go back to something that President Obama said in his speech in Mexico City. He said, "We understand the root cause of much of the violence here and so much suffering for many Mexicans is the demand for illegal drugs, including in the United States. We recognize that most of the guns used to commit violence here in Mexico come from the United States, going on from there." Truth in what the president was saying?
Oh, certainly, and I think it's music to the ears of Mexican authorities and Mexican people in general. I think there's a great recognition here that Mexico is suffering because of internal conditions in the U.S. in terms of drug use. So it's very much something that Mexicans want to hear, is that that the United States recognizes that it's a co-responsible partner in this.
Jim, we have to say goodbye to you in a minute or two, but I'm curious about Mexico's relationship with its neighbors in Central America.
Well, it's gotten better. I think they've named some very capable ambassadors there, and there's been a lot of dialogue between Mexico and Guatemala about how to strengthen the border there. That Mexico is very aware that Central America, as the pressure on the drug lords and the crime figures mount in Mexico, a lot of the operations have moved south into Central America. So we're even seeing things like processing of cocaine in laboratories in Honduras, and countries like Honduras just don't have the strong institutions needed to combat this.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times, and I apologize again for some of our technical problems here. But Tim Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. And he's Mexico City bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers. He had actually worked for about 14 years for the Miami Herald, covering U.S. policy in Latin America. Chris Wilson staying with us for the rest of the hour. Again, associate at the Mexico Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, where he develops the Institute's research and programming on regional economic integration and U.S.-Mexico border affairs. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY, talking about the all-important and often forgotten relationship between the United States and Mexico. Chris, going back to some of the things that both you and Tim were saying about the economic connection between these two countries, I believe Mexico is the number two importer of American goods and services.
That's right. Yeah, Mexico is the second most important market for U.S. exports. It's a huge trading relationship between the two countries. We actually trade now $1 million of goods and services every minute.
Every minute.
Every minute, $1 million. It's just this enormous size. But what's actually really interesting is it's not only a huge trading relationship, it's also a sort of unique trading relationship. One we only really have a similar nature trading relationship with Canada. And that's because we don't just trade finished products with one another, we actually build products together. So, for example, a car part could start off in Michigan, make its way to Monterrey or Mexico City, which could come back in a chassis. That chassis could be put in a car in the United States and then sold in the United States or around the world. And this is the way that this deepness of the relationship means that we actually need to have each other be competitive. So, say Mexico's economy does well and it's becoming more productive, that's helping U.S. exports and vice versa. So we're really working together now in a way that was not the case previously, and is not the case with China. And sort of the best figure to sort of get your mind wrapped around it is that when the United States imports goods from Mexico, actually on average 40% of those goods, the content in those goods were created in the United States first. So if we spend $1 on imports from Mexico, 40 cents of that stays in the United States. The comparative figure with China is just 4% or 4 cents on every dollar. So it's a very different trading relationship than we have with other countries.
And of course, Mexico has oil.
The energy trade between the two countries is very important. Mexico's a major oil producer, although it's having facing some challenges now because it's mainly relied on a state petroleum company, Pemex, which has been sort of losing its ability to produce at the same level each year. as the oil, the sort of easy oil, is used up, and they need to be getting oil from deep water or more complicated mm-hmm. structures geologically. And so now there's a talk underway in Mexico about having a big energy reform that would allow the state company to partner with private enterprise, which could maybe renew the vigor of that enterprise.
Of course, Mexico has this new president, Peña Nieto. Tell us a little bit about him as you understand him and how he was able to win this election. It was the end of 2012.
Sure. So, yeah, last year Mexico had presidential elections. This is the return of the PRI is the party that he's right. a part of. The PRI ruled Mexico straight without interruption for about 70 years until the year 2000, when Vicente Fox and the PAN sort of, you know, took power, which was a piece of democratization in Mexico, really a sea change in the political arena. So as Enrique Peña Nieto, the new president, took power, there was a lot of questions as to whether or not this was a return of the old guard, what are known as dinosaurs in Mexico, or whether or not the party's really changed and the climate has changed in Mexico. Whether, you know, is he a dinosaur or is he the face of a new party? He's absolutely a lot younger than the old guard, but there's still, I think, to a certain extent, some questions about what he represents for Mexico.
Is it too soon to tell? I mean, is it too soon to tell who he and what he represents?
Well, I think the bottom line is that the context has certainly changed. So there's really no way that Mexico could revert to a sort of less than democratic system. That's just something that the people of Mexico will not accept. They have created a certain number of institutions that safeguard democracy, an electoral institution, freedom of information system, so that reporters and institutions can gain access to the government. The government's forced to be more transparent and competitive than ever before. But, you know, what he has been doing is in some way, it can be read both ways. He's on one hand been centralizing power in a few really important ministries, centralizing sort of control over some of the state and local government agencies through the party mechanisms, working with his fellow PRI representatives at the state level. But on the other hand, they've been pushing through a very robust economic reform agenda. They've been working with the other parties and have been able to find compromise to pass an education reform that was really important. Now, more recently, a telecom reform that would increase competition in a very important sector of the Mexican economy. So in some ways, you know, we see the old PRI working, but we see them working in a new political context.
It seemed that President Obama was saying or certainly trying to say, which is that a robust, a healthy Mexican economy has a direct impact on illegal immigration of Mexicans coming into the United States looking for work, looking for a future. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, conceptually it makes a lot of sense. I think the time frame might be a little bit longer than some of the political mm-hmm. discussions would lead on. But yes, of course, you know, the main reason that there's migration and historically has been so much migration from Mexico to the United States is the difference in wages. If you can move across the border and all of a sudden make 10 times more than you would have previously been making, that's something that is extremely attractive. But as wages rise in Mexico, as jobs are more plentiful in Mexico, that pull factor becomes a little bit less strong from the United States. But before we really get to sort of, you know, equality of opportunity or anywhere close to that, that will take another, you know, couple of decades in Mexico at the very least. But at the same time, you know, every little bit changes things a little bit. So as Mexico's economy has done well, there's certainly an impact that has. I'd agree with Tim what he said before, which is that the downturn in the U.S. economy probably had a stronger impact, but absolutely the upturn in Mexico's economy does play a part.
And what about those manufacturing companies along the U.S.-Mexico border? They seem to grow out of NAFTA. And how much do you think of Mexico's economy is based on those industries?
Well, something really interesting has happened over the last, well, really 20 years since NAFTA took effect. You know, before that, the maquiladoras is what they're called, these plants along the border, were only allowed to exist in the border zone. And after NAFTA, they were basically allowed to exist throughout the country of Mexico. So manufacturing and growth has been slowly spreading from north now to the center of Mexico. In some ways, it still hasn't reached the rural south of Mexico. But manufacturing as a whole has been a huge piece of Mexico's economy. I mean, Mexico's economy is really driven by manufacturing exports, largely to the United States, but increasingly also to the rest of Latin America and even the world. And this is really different than some of the other economies in the region. You know, economies like Brazil or Peru or Chile have taken off because of the growth of exports of minerals and foods to China, basically. Whereas Mexico has been in a different position. It was competing with China to be a manufacturer. And so as China started to grow in the early 2000s, it really lost out as factories picked up, just like they picked up from the United States. They also picked up from Mexico and moved to China. But some recent changes in the wages in China, the cost of fuel to ship products across the Pacific Ocean, currency values, sort of a number of factors have brought competitiveness back to North America. And that means both back to Mexico and back to the United States.
NAFTA was signed in 1994. It's hard to imagine. It's almost 20 years old. But certainly critics have talked about outsourcing and lower wages, that it would depress wages and good jobs in this country. Has that, in fact, did that become a reality?
Well, it's one of these big, complicated webs, and it's a little bit hard to disentangle every piece and attribute something to a single thing. But, you know, jobs continued to be created on both sides of the border after NAFTA happened. But that doesn't mean that there weren't dislocations. Right. When you sort of, you know, open up the trading relationship between the two countries, Mexico, for example, started doing a really good job at producing tomatoes and some other produce that it wasn't previously exporting to the United States. They became very competitive in that because of their climate, because of the cost of labor in Mexico, and so that increased. But at the same time, corn exports from the United States increased to Mexico. So there were winners and losers on both sides. That's absolutely true, and that's why it's still seen as a divisive agreement. But I do think that on the whole, there are more winners than losers. It's then, of course, the job of government to make sure that they take care of those people who need to be retrained, brought into the new industries. But something really interesting has been happening, I think, which is that the way people in the United States and Mexico view NAFTA and agreements like that is changing generationally. I think as in some public opinion polling supports this, it is that as young people are growing up in a more globalized world, they're less critical of it and just accept that as the way that it is. Now, you know, we don't, as a young person in America, feel that it's unfair to have to compete with Mexico in terms of production. We don't feel that it's unfair to have to compete with China or the rest of the world. It's just our job to make sure that we can compete. And as we start to change the question to think about that, it's really clear that Mexico is actually part of the solution, not part of the problem, because the more that we work with Mexico to produce goods in the most cost-effective way, the more the economies of both countries will succeed.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about U.S.-Mexico relations, and often a forgotten conversation. President Obama was in Mexico for 2 days last week, then went on to Costa Rica. And again, Chris Wilson is our guest, associate at the Mexico Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He develops the Institute's research and programming on regional economic integration and U.S.-Mexico border affairs. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you want from this U.S.-Mexico relationship? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Bryn Mawr Film Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY, presents Critically Acclaimed, an evening with your favorite film critics on Friday, May 10th at 6 p.m. A.O. Scott, Carrie Rickey, Stephen Ray, and Lisa Schwartzbaum will compare notes on beloved films, debate the future of film criticism, and answer questions. Dedicated to Roger Ebert, there will also be a private dinner with the critics where guests can challenge them one-on-one. For more information, BrynMawrFilm.org.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. This is Mrs. Jameson, the history teacher, and I just wanted to say goodbye.
On the next Fresh Air, Laura Linney talks about her starring role as a high school teacher who is battling cancer in Showtime's dark comedy, The Big C, which is now in its final season. Laura Linney on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
There's been a lot of discussion about the new book Lean In by Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg. It's part memoir, part self-help book, with posits about women and leadership. On the next Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb, our own posits about how women lead, what leadership is, and what drives women or holds them back. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, again talking with Chris Wilson about U.S.-Mexico relations and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We're interested in what you want from this relationship. Chris, the Pew Research Center actually conducted a survey of Mexican public opinion. This was before President Obama's trip last week to that country, and found that about two-thirds of Mexicans have a positive view of the United States. Do you think that would be true in the United States, the public opinion of Mexicans or Mexico?
Actually, this is a really interesting, there was another survey that was recently done, actually, that the Wilson Center participated in the creation of, looking at U.S. opinion of Mexico. And amazingly, U.S. opinion of Mexico is at a low right now, even as Mexican opinion of the United States is at a high.
Interesting.
So, but I think this has to do with perception of the drug war, the so-called drug war in Mexico, that we really, in the United States, are viewing Mexico still very much through this lens of drugs and violence. It's not so much that we dislike Mexico as we see it as a country that's experiencing a tremendous challenge. And these stories of the positive side of Mexico, the economy that's improving, of a manufacturing system that's reaching higher levels, et cetera, have not been told as much, so that they're very much under the radar still in the United States.
Even though the drugs in Mexico, the people that largely use that are Americans.
Of course, the consumers of the drugs are largely Americans. Now, drug use itself has increased in Mexico slightly as more drugs are just present in Mexico because of the amount of trafficking that's going through Mexico. But no, of course, the drug trade is still very much driven by demand on the U.S. side. And that's why we've moved into, over the last few years, what's the new sort of paradigm of talking about these drugs and violence issues between the two countries, which is the term that's used a lot, is shared responsibility. And I think that's a fair one, because obviously on the United States side, we're responsible for the demand, we're responsible for the guns that head south, for the money that's returned because of the drug sales that fuel violence in Mexico. But Mexico is also, of course, responsible because of the weak institutions that have not been able to clamp down on the criminal groups in a way that a more robust legal system would be able to do. And so both sides have a lot of work to do, and that's what shared responsibility means.
There have been recently, in the last couple of years, a number of stories about corruption within the Mexican military, within the police force, within various forms of the government as well. Is that true, and how much do you think that's hurting Mexico?
Yes, it's absolutely true that same money and violence that comes, the money that comes back from the United States is then used to bribe officials in Mexico. Other officials are extorted and are threatened if they don't comply. I think that the area where it's really still a very serious issue is at the lower levels of government, the local government or even state level government. The federal government has a lot of capacity to be able to respond. They have the capacity to protect top-level officials from these types of threats. So it's not to say that there's zero corruption in the federal government. That would be overstating the case by a long shot. But it's the most serious problem by far at some of the state and local levels. And that's why U.S. cooperation with Mexico on security issues sort of has, mm-hmm. for the past several years, focused very much on supporting the federal government. But I think there will be a shift to looking at how the U.S. can work with the Mexican federal government to support the states and local governments to free them of some of this corruption that's still very much an issue.
And how much do you think security and checkpoints along the Mexico-U.S. border hurts the economic development between these two countries?
Yeah, it's a major issue. I think that, this was really after 9/11 in the United States that we made a major push to increase security along the U.S.-Mexico border. And we did increase security in a major way. We no longer, if you cross the border from Mexico to the U.S., you can't just say, I'm an American citizen and get waved through. You now have to prove your identity. We have more border patrol than ever. But some of these things have come at a cost, and there are sort of several studies that show that it's billions of dollars a year in lost economic growth that happened because of the increase in security or the increase of congestion and traffic, long lines at the border because of that. So now the challenge is, how do we maintain or even improve the levels of security while we facilitate trade? Because, you know, if we're working so hard to have products go back and forth across the border between the U.S. and Mexico multiple times, that means that they have to wait in line every time. They have to sort of pay that extra cost each time. It's taking away right now from the competitiveness of the United States and Mexico.
And how long does someone typically have to wait in line?
The numbers vary incredibly from sort of, you know, bridge to bridge or crossing to crossing, but it ranges anywhere from, you know, a few minutes to 3 hours in some cases.
But do you think it's possible, and of course the border is such a contentious issue, but to have the kind of security that many people in this country want, and also have the ability to go back and forth for trade? Can we do both?
I think so. And that's what actually one of the things that President Obama and President Peña Nieto did was they renewed their commitment to what's called the 21st century border, which is exactly that. It's a series of strategies that are designed to increase or strengthen both security and efficiency at the border. So to give just one example, one of those sort of strategies that make up that are what are called trusted traveler programs. To be a part of one of these, you need to apply to the federal government in the United States. You need to have your fingerprints taken, have them do a background check on you, give them all sorts of information about where you've lived for the last several years, etc. The government then makes a determination whether or not you really do present a very low risk to be trafficking anything, to be doing anything sort of illegal at the border. If they decide that you really are a low-risk traveler, then you get a special card, and you can use that card to go through a special lane at the border. It doesn't mean that you have zero check, but it means that you're processed a lot faster, and you normally will be able to avoid these long lines. Those are the types of things that can have a good effect on both security and efficiency. And the reason they're good for security is because the officials are then able to focus more of their attention on the people they know less about, or the people that might actually be flagged as being an extra dangerous person. So we're able to sort of segment the different levels of risk at the border and focus on the ones that we should be focusing on, and less time on the, you know, thousands and even millions of people that are crossing the border to do really positive things like go to school, go to work, to buy, to shop, which is this is a binational way of existence in the border. We need to facilitate that.
Kind of a security easy pass, then, something like that?
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, we have right now they have them in airports also now. It's called a global entry card, and the border we call them a sentry card or a fast if you're a commercial trucker. So it's just a pass to get in the fast line.
Do Mexicans have the same kind of worry about security along the border that Americans tend to have?
I think not to the same extent, although what's really been increasing in recent years is concerns in Mexico about security at their southern border with Guatemala, where a lot of crime is happening and lots of trafficking, human trafficking and trafficking of drugs is happening. But along the U.S.-Mexico border, you know, there's much more concern about things heading north into the United States that are either unauthorized or even dangerous, versus going south. The conversation about weapons heading south from the United States into Mexico, though, is slowly changing that, and Mexico is trying to look at ways that they can institute stronger checks. Traditionally, if you traveled from the United States, were on a highway and headed south into Mexico, you would have a maybe seconds-long stop, if any stop at all, whereas when you're heading back north into the United States, you could be in a long line to go through an inspection process. That may change over time, but hopefully both sides find out ways to to both have efficiency and security at the same time.
And again, that's Chris Wilson from the Mexico Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, talking about this all-important but largely overlooked relationship between the United States and Mexico. And again, we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Do you think there can be more cooperation about when it comes to education, even immigration on both sides of the border, looking obviously for people with specific kinds of skills?
Yeah, on education especially, there's, I think, a really big opportunity in the relationship right now. The president's launched something that they're calling the Bilateral Forum on Higher Education, Innovation, and Research.
Wow.
Which is really just the start of a process, but it's trying to look at ways that we can better tap into educational exchange opportunities. For Americans, that probably means growing cultural competencies, language skills by traveling to Mexico and studying there. And for Mexicans, it means really tapping into what is still the best university system in the world, especially at the graduate level. The United States has most of the best universities in the world. So bringing Mexican students to study science, technology, engineering, math, these things that really are drivers of innovation and economic growth. And at the same time, both of these exchanges will increase the just understanding across the border. It will, you know, produce connections and personal relationships that will later lead to connections and business opportunities, research opportunities across the border, the types of things that can just really strengthen the relationship. But right now, the amount of educational exchange between the two countries is surprisingly low, given the fact that we're neighbors. So U.S. students studying in Mexico, the numbers are very low. Mexico sends, in terms of their students that they send to the United States, it's around 9th or 10th compared to all the other countries. So, you know, countries like Turkey or Vietnam send more students to the United States to study than Mexico does right now.
And when you look at the numbers of immigrants in this country, whether documented or undocumented, what percentage of them are Mexicans?
It's an important percentage still. I think that the figure would be around half of the undocumented population in the United States is of Mexican origin. So this is, you know, the numbers, the new numbers of flow are changing a lot, but the old numbers of who's in the country is still very much predominantly Mexican. But increasingly, the migrants that we're finding, even coming across the border from Mexico, are more from, you know, the growth area is Central American migrants. Globally, growth areas are really Asian migrants to the United States. So the sort of the makeup of the immigrant population is changing, but it's still very much predominantly Mexican population in the United States when we're looking at our immigrant population.
So there must be a lot of focus in Mexico then on whatever the United States decides to do about immigration, whether legal or illegal. I'm thinking of the Dreamers as well, something that President Obama has talked a lot about, the idea of giving Dreamers the chance to have citizenship.
Yeah, all of these immigration issues in the U.S., whether the DREAM Act or a broader immigration reform, are incredibly important to Mexico and to their citizens that are living in the United States. So Mexico absolutely sees sort of one of their responsibilities as being to their citizens that are living outside of Mexico in the United States. And that's around 10 million right now. So really 1 in 10, almost 1 in 10 Mexicans are living in the United States.
Wow.
So Mexican, the government absolutely has an interest in that.
President Obama, and we began by talking about some of the stereotypes, I think, on both sides of the border and the importance of trying to address some of those stereotypes. And I am thinking of some of the pretty horrifying things that have been said about Mexicans in this country. And I wonder just how much you think that affects policy and moving forward on this relationship.
Yeah, it means that things are still very sensitive. It means that we still need to be very careful on both sides how we speak about the relationship. There's no doubt that the you know, the image of Mexico as a poor country sending poor people to the United States to take U.S. jobs is still a stereotype that exists. And there's some truth, right? There is some truth to the idea that there are poor migrants looking for jobs in the United States. There are also, you know, alongside the sort of dishwashers and construction workers, there are also people making movies and doing scientific research in the United States and building businesses in the United States. One of the categories that we've seen an uptick in recent years are entrepreneurs that are bringing investment into the United States from Mexico to start small businesses. So the range is much wider than our imagination leaves space for sometimes, and that limited space for our conception of Mexico sometimes does limit our ability to create the policy that would make the most sense between the two countries.
I thought it was interesting that President Obama went to Costa Rica after his trip to Mexico. I guess he could have gone anywhere, but he chose Costa Rica. What do you think the significance of that is?
I think in large respect, I think this is in response to the challenge that Central America is facing right now, both economically and in terms of organized crime-related violence. So as, we go back a couple of decades, the drug traffic seemed to flow mostly through the Caribbean to the United States. There was a lot of pressure put on that route, and it was largely closed down, and drug trafficking, especially of cocaine from South America, moved through Mexico. Well, now Mexico's stepped up its enforcement and has really clamped down on that trafficking, and it's caused a lot of these criminal groups to focus their operations in Central America. And the governments of Central America don't have the same capacity that Mexico even has to respond to it. So some of them, particularly El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, have been facing very serious challenges as a result of that. And so the president went to Costa Rica, but he was also meeting with presidents from around the region in Central America. And I think they're looking at ways that the United States can work with Central America, but actually that Colombia and Mexico can also work with Central America to confront some of those challenges.
Well, Chris, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. I learned a lot. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
You're welcome. And that's Chris Wilson, associate at the Mexico Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. We also talked with Tim Johnson, Mexico City Bureau Chief for McClatchy Newspapers. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, but stay with us. We'll be right back.